You're listening to HowStreet.com Radio, available online at TalkDigitalNetwork.com. Welcome to HowStreet.com Radio, the online source for market opinions. Here is Jim Goddard.
My guest is market historian Bob Hoy. He's the chief investment strategist for chartsandmarkets.com. He's speaking to us from Vancouver. Welcome back to the show, Bob.
Yeah, hi, Jim. Good to be with you. And as you know, always good to be with our listeners.
Bob, the Prime Minister, Mark Carney, announced that Canada is going to buy new submarines from a Danish-German consortium. The deal, $12 billion to start with, but $100 billion over its lifetime. The deals like this, are they good for the economy? Are they good for the country?
Well, first of all, it gets Canada back into the reality of helping out with its own defenses rather than just freeloading on the American ability to defend the continent. So that is constructive. And building them, yeah, they're going to be quite a bit of assembly and finishing off. That'll be at the port of Halifax, and I haven't seen anything as to how many of the submarines will be on the West Coast. I'm sure that Ottawa may sometime recognize that there is a western part of the Canada.
Oh, Esquimalt, which is next to Victoria, is part of the deal. That's where maintenance will be done on the West Coast.
Canada has been very remiss in looking after itself as far as defense goes and freeloading on the Americans.
Now, Canadian innovation, should we be teaming up with the Ukrainians to make the world's best drones?
Yeah, I saw that floating around, and yeah, it's a good idea, but so long as it's done with a large amount of private money rather than government money. I personally wouldn't go invest in a drone. Why the hell would I want my government to invest my tax money on some scheme that the government has?
Mm-hmm. Now, I thought every Canadian soldier should have their own personal drone, one maybe to scout ahead, one to look for landmines, others to deal with communications, others to strike the enemy, but have each soldier have a drone or maybe 10 under their command so that you multiply the force, because we have a small armed forces, but experts around the world have never doubted the fighting spirit of Canadians or their training.
Oh, yeah. No, the Canadian troops are proud and have historically a great accomplishment. The problem is Ottawa. And it is an entrenched culture that cannot be reformed. And you know, Jim, just the tone of our conversation here in criticizing Ottawa, they got bills in there where they can come and charge us with offenses and take our computers and shut everything down. And if I get stuff published in Canada Free Press. And a few years ago, I talked to Judy, who is the editor. I said, look it, these guys are going to come after me at some time. Should I write an nom de plume, like just a name? She said, don't bother, they'll figure out, no matter what name you use, they'll figure out who you are. So there we are. You and I, Jim, are at risk now of Ottawa displeasure.
Well, having been a broadcaster, everything I did was pretty public anyway.
Yeah.
I know when police officers complain that, oh my God, having to wear a camera, I'll have no privacy. I said all of my business was either in front of a camera or a microphone. I had no privacy at my job. Why should you? Anyway, Bob, we'll take a look at some of the headlines that caught your eye here.
Yeah.
The first one was AI... data centers, they're considered to be monsters that will drive up your electrical bill, but is that always going to be the case?
Data centers start to drive up residential electricity bills. What is happening? There is so much capacity power coming on for data centers, and it is beginning to be over capacity of electricity. So, yeah, residences could benefit.
Now, they're going to build a massive AI center not far from Edmonton, $13 billion worth. And they promise it's not going to suck up local water because it's a closed cooling system. And they're going to use natural gas to power it, something that Alberta has lots of.
Oh, yeah. No, this is, they're going to use natural gas to generate electricity and then export it to British Columbia because the government of British Columbia has a phobia about pipelines. So,
well, they said they wouldn't fight one in court because, well, look, pipelines are under federal jurisdiction. How is a province going to overrule a federal government?
It can't, but just the constant fighting by our idiotic premier of British Columbia is just, he's an amazing dude, I'll tell you.
The late John Horgan, the premier, he fought the pipeline, spent millions of taxpayer dollars to fight the pipelines, but then when he retired, he went to work for Teck, which is one of the world's biggest coal companies.
I didn't know that one.
Yeah, so I always wondered, you know, politicians do one thing, but, you know, say one thing, but do something else.
Also, they're uptight about oil tankers coming down the coast. They seem not to understand that their American oil tankers come from Alaska down to the west coast of the U.S., and then also, sometimes if you look down into the main harbor in Vancouver, there are what? Oil tankers. So they're already here, and they're making a big noise about banning oil tankers. I suppose if they were really enthusiastic about it, they would ban American tankers from heading down the coast.
Also, since the Exxon Valdez disaster in Alaska, tankers on the West Coast have to be double-hulled.
Yeah.
And I looked up the other day to see if there'd been any major disasters involving double-hulled ships, and there haven't been.
No.
Navigation.
That one was an accident due to poor judgment by the bridge. I think there was drinking and hanky-panky going on, and they lost track of where they were.
Oh, yeah. Since that disaster, though, navigation aids and predicting the weather all much better than it was back in the 70s.
Oh, yeah.
So don't use 70s disasters to justify what's going on now. Now, the UN, we have a headline here from What's Up with that. UN Secretary General demands $1.3 trillion a year to fight climate chaos. How can we fight climate?
Right. First of all, they are against climate warming. And we can look back on almost a billion years of life on Earth, and warming has always been very friendly to life on Earth, and no matter what shape it is in. I mean, you know, if you're out in the summer somewhere and you're near an old snowfield or near a glacier, like in Glacier National Park in Montana, just go and imagine lifting up the tongue of ice and seeing what kind of life is just under the ice. Well, back at the extension of the last ice age, there was ice all the way down to what is now Chicago. And you would lift up that tongue of ice and look under, it'd be nothing there. And then, I don't know, maybe 400 million years ago, a whole planet Earth had turned into a slush ball. And tell me how life was getting on when you had the whole of the Earth packed with slush. Nah. So one, warming has been good for life on Earth for damn near, almost a billion years. And then the next one is the got this idea that carbon dioxide adds warming. Well, can you imagine? Maybe they imagine that a carbon dioxide molecule has a shiny side down and reflects heat back down to the Earth, but we know that it doesn't have a shiny side down, and any photons of energy from Earth hit it, and it gives a little wiggle, and then stays at its natural thing. So CO2, now also, going back a few million years, where you've got evidence that the climate cools off for a long period, and then it warms up. And guess what? It leads the concentrations of atmospheric CO2 by 500 or 600 years. So it's not that CO2 causes climate change. It's that the amount of CO2 in the atmosphere varies due to climate change. Actually, all they are is like Mark Carney. Actually, I saw a headline for him the other day. Our prime minister, the headline called him a Manchurian candidate, that he is in office to turn Canada into a WEF-run globalist whole thing. And he is. I like the term Manchurian candidate for Prime Minister Carney.
Canada is in a great position here to provide the world's natural gas. Why have people turned against it? Because I remember 20 years ago, they were trying to promote cars to run on propane to clean up the atmosphere. And then one day they decided that natural gas was evil.
Oh, yeah. Now, there's extracting hydrocarbons from the earth is evil. And then they got this, a crazy idea that if you take carbon dioxide and cram it down an old oil well, it gets down to the fact that they want to take carbon dioxide out of the atmosphere, and it does nothing with heat, but I'll tell you, at 400 parts per million in the atmosphere, geologically speaking, that's at the low side. A few million years ago, it was at 7,000 parts per million, and it had nothing to do with the ups and downs in the climate temperatures. And it's just totally absurd. And also, Jim, if atmospheric concentration of CO2 gets below 150 parts per million, life on Earth will shut down. And the governments and mania people today are trying to lower atmospheric carbon dioxide. Really, really vicious. Well, as I said, Manchurian candidate stuff.
We'll have more with Bob Hoy right after this.
Don't miss out. Stay informed. Receive the HowStreet.com weekly recap with thought-provoking podcasts, radio, and articles delivered to your inbox. Sign up for the HowStreet.com weekly recap on our homepage at HowStreet.com.
Welcome back. We're speaking with Bob Hoy. Bob, gold has lost about $1,000 in value since its peak. Is it going to settle out here, or do you think it's going to increase in value again and in the short term?
Yeah, well, let's go back. It was a fabulous rally.
Yeah.
Got very overbought, very popular trade, and then it had a hard hit. And that's the way it is. Now, to look at it on the very long term, you want to look at gold's real price, because that is an indicator of whether the mining business is making money or not.
Yeah.
Now, if you look, become a specialist in the price and gold price in New York in U.S. dollars, you got a quote, but what does it tell you? So actually, we take it a step further and take gold and divide it by the commodity, CRB commodity index, considering that the CRB commodity index is a practical measure of mining costs. And in a post-bubble world, the real price goes up for gold, and it's been going up for a few years now. And but it's the long trend can go for 20 years of rising real price for gold. And what the real price does is the mining companies make money, and then they go out and they find yet more gold deposits and mine them there. And it actually is a wonderful world for gold miners. And within this, we like juniors, because you get a winner and a junior, whoa, sky's the limit. And we have actually put together a while ago a short list of junior golds that we like. And actually, that was a couple of years ago we did that. And there's been some very nice winners there. There's been a couple of dogs, and there are a couple of that went off the board kind of thing. But anyways, we like the gold sector, and a good way to participate is in the juniors, and we do have a list.
Now, something that doesn't exist in reality but is worth a lot of money, Bitcoin and other cryptocurrencies. Bob, could you ever imagine somebody just deciding that nothing would be worth so much?
I've been thinking the Bitcoin thing is it's part of the bubble. And when the bubble really fails, it'll head south. And now that's the thing. Now, what we're seeing here is we were looking for the good stuff in the financial markets to mid-year. And then a couple of months ago, we began to say, hey, this is getting really good. So we have identified this as the completing a great financial bubble. The last great financial bubble was 1929, and then the one before was 1873, and it was followed by a long depression. 1825 was another example. 1772 was one, and then the first great financial bubble was the South Sea bubble of 1720. Now, I'm impressed because the participants, like retail speculators and stock jobbers and everything else in 1720, had no idea what they're doing, but they created this fabulous bubble with identifying characteristics. Then each of the bubbles since, the participants and governments and central bankers, of course, know nothing about or very little about previous great bubbles, and they're able to replicate it. So here we are. This is number six of the great bubbles. And again, 1929 was number five. So it's going to be a very interesting year. Now, in New York in 1929, of course, the market peaked in early September. And then in New York in 1873, the market peaked in September. And then throughout any part of recorded history where you've got timing, if there's going to be a financial disaster, it'll more than likely be discovered in the fall. So sometime after September, it could be discovered that there's a huge financial problem out there. But hey, September's a long ways away in this kind of a market.
Now, so many of the people I've interviewed are worried that this could be, you know, the fall that we see, a big fall in the stock market. Is there any way to predict that you're going to have a major crash?
Yeah. You have a major bubble.
Huh.
There will be a major crash.
Is there any defensive strategy you should have to deal with that?
Yeah. Listen to this one, Jim. Mm-hmm. In the early 1900s, various senior bankers and officials and whatnot realized, they knew that if you had a financial crisis, it would be followed by a severe recession. So then they thought, okay, you then eliminate the financial crisis, there'll be no recession. So then they invented this idea called the lender of last resort, meaning the Federal Reserve. And this is what has been behind the Federal Reserve. It opened for, let's call it intrusion, in December 1913. Then they were fully operational in January 1914. And you just take a list, and according to the National Bureau of Economic Research, the NBR, there's been 18 recessions since. Now, in any sort of a discipline, you have a hypothesis. And all it takes is one failure to condemn the theory. So the first recession in the early 30s should have condemned central banking. But no, these guys are all true believers, and here we are again, that the issue is that nobody can do anything about it. But they have devised the Federal Reserve expecting that the Fed is going to prevent a crisis that precedes a recession. So it's rounded about stuff, and it's been disproved. As I say, the theory has failed 18 times since 1914.
And the next time, will they say, well, if the Fed had done this, or Fed, can central banks actually control what happens with the markets?
No, but you know, and the 1960s, various economic theorists were saying that the Great Depression was caused by the Federal Reserve being tight after 1929. Now, there are articles and evidence that the Fed was actually quite easy during the crash, and indeed one of the Fed spokesmen in January 1930 said that they, in January 1930, the full size of the disaster was not yet known, but said that they met the severity with the usual ways of by providing ample liquidity and patting themselves on the back for doing the right thing. That was January 1930, and then the rest followed. So if you have a great bubble, you will have a great depression.
Bob, anything else catch your attention?
Yeah, well, there was, I don't know here. No, I don't think we'll bother with these ones. If we're going to do them next week.
Okay. Bob, have a great weekend.
Yeah, and you too, Jim. And I look forward to getting together a week hence. Notice, a week hence.
My guest has been market historian Bob Hoy. He's the chief investment strategist for chartsandmarkets.com. If you have any questions for Bob, you can send them to info@howstreet.com. We'll ask that question for you. Our YouTube channel is Talk Digital Network. Find us on X at How Street. We're also on Facebook. I'm Jim Goddard. Thank you for listening.
Comments made on HowStreet.com radio are an expression of opinion only and should not be construed in any matter whatsoever as recommendations to buy or sell any financial instrument at any time. Available online at TalkDigitalNetwork.com, HowStreet.com radio is a production of HowStreet Media Incorporated.